to a minister, a priest, and a rabbi walk into a radio station. I'm Dr. Pandora Carlucci, and I'm here with Jay Horrigan. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning, Pandora. How are you today?
I'm doing okie dokie. Thank you very much. And how are you?
I am doing okie dokie as well. Thank you very much.
I find some of those old expressions work well for me. When I can't remember the new ones, just go with an old one, and it just keeps rolling along.
I don't understand the new ones, so I look really silly trying to pull them off. So
I can understand. Jay and I are joined this morning by the stars of our show, and we have Reverend Eric Cherry, Rabbi Tom Alperts, and Reverend Kathy McAdams. Good morning to all three of you. And we're going to have introductions by each speaker. So if you haven't listened to our show before, you'll have an idea of who's going to be talking and kind of why they're talking. And then we'll share with you our subject for the day. We're broadcasting this on Zoom, so we're all in different locations, using the technology of today to safely distance, but kind of build those bridges of communication, collaboration, and community spirit across the miles. And we hope that you enjoy today's conversation. So I'll begin with Rabbi Tom Alperts. And good morning. And Tom, if you could just tell us a little bit about why you've decided to do this, participate in this radio show, and how things are going along today.
Hi, so I am Rabbi Tom Alpert. I am the rabbi at Temple Etzayim here in Franklin. Let me answer those in no particular order. How are things going today? The expression I heard someone say when asked this question is, COVID fine. So in a complex situation, all well, thank you very much. As to why I'm doing this, partially because it's a blast and I have so much fun with you, Pandora, with Jay, and with my colleagues and friends, Reverend Eric Cherry and Reverend Kathy McAdams. It's so much fun to be part of this. And besides that, so I have to have a serious answer, besides it being fun, it's also an opportunity for leaders of different faiths to share their commonalities and the things that make them unique. And I think those are both things that should be shared. And this is a good time to do it, this month especially, but in general.
I know that there's actually a lot to share. The last time we had a conversation was the day after the election. A lot has changed. A lot has not changed. And we're still moving forward. We've celebrated Thanksgiving, which really is a time that we broaden our community outlook. And I think you and your congregation have been involved in that particular holiday and moving forward. How was that, you know, affected by the kind of constraints of COVID?
Me or yes. You want me? Okay, just, I'll start.
I'm sorry for not making that clear.
No, I just want to make sure. I didn't want to take it over from my colleagues, but let me say briefly. From our congregation's perspective, well, we had our wonderful joint interfaith Thanksgiving service. I'll let someone else tell you more about that, but it was a special experience, and our congregation participated along with several other of the houses of worship here in town. But within my own synagogue, well, you know, we did all the various things that we typically do. We collected donations for the Franklin Food Pantry, and we brought in, I think, substantially more this year than we've brought in. So I'm not quite sure how that happened, but we continue to do that. People dropped off their cans of gravy over at the bin at the temple, and nobody had to, you know, connect up physically with people. And then on the Shabbat after Thanksgiving, we've had a tradition for a few years that we refer to as leftover Shabbat. And that is We typically have had people come into the temple around 6 o'clock, which is earlier than we usually meet. We sit around a table, we eat our leftovers, and we have a very truncated service, which is just a chance for us to sing a few table songs and be together. Okay, so this year we couldn't do that, but we did it anyway. That is to say, we still started at 6. We still, it was very informal. We again truncated the liturgy. People talked about what they ate. People talked about what they were grateful for, and people talked about what they how they adjusted to not being with as many people physically, and all the various ways people did that. And it worked really well. So that was, you know, it was a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you for sharing that with us, because it gives us another lens to see how Thanksgiving was celebrated across town, because I think many of us were limited and had small Zoom experiences with family and friends and such. But I'm glad that you raised the interfaith service, because it was a beautiful service. And I think, Reverend Cherry, all three of you were a part of that, and other ministers, but you were the keynote speaker, I believe, that evening. I'm not sure if that's not the religious term, and I apologize for that, but you had the longer presentation. Could you introduce yourself and then share a little bit about Thanksgiving and the interfaith service?
Well, thank you, Pandora, and great to be with you all today. I'm Reverend Eric Cherry. I serve as the minister at First Universalist Church in Franklin, and I'm going to let you in behind the curtain a little bit on Thanksgiving interfaith services and clergy. So our tradition in town is that whoever's the most recently settled clergy person has to preach the sermon at the Thanksgiving service. It's not something that we're all craving the chance to do, because it's extra work during a really, you know, complicated part of the year. And somehow I was able to finagle my way out of it for the first 2 years that I served in Franklin. So it fell to me. I tried my hardest to get out of it, but no, more seriously, it was an honor and a privilege. And, we struggled a lot with the question of how to do this during the COVID time. And was there a way to have a meaningful event without being physically present? And, 9 months ago, I think we all would have said impossible, but over the months and through various experiments and attempts at creating community through online worship, we were all ready to give it a go. And I certainly felt connected with the folks that were gathering that evening, and I think we shared a healing word, I think somebody told me that the participation was higher than it usually is, which is great. I mean, it's one of those takeaways from the COVID time that, you know, everything really needs to be hybrid from now until forever, because it's a really nice way to include more people. I thought it was a pretty special evening. And just for what it's worth, my Thanksgiving was very low key. My wife and I celebrated. We cooked as if there were going to be 12 people, but it was only the two of us, and we're still eating leftovers. And as you say, Pandora, sort of zoomed with small groups of people throughout the day. The church had opportunities for people to gather, to feel the sense of connection. And participated with in the effort that Tom already described for the supporting the Franklin Food Pantry. And that's all for the good.
Thank you. And Jay, I think you were going to comment.
Well, I was just going to ask, actually, all three of you. I was out on the common. We did Santa on the Common last weekend. It did it differently. Instead of kids coming up and sitting on Santa's lap, they drove by and Santa stood on the side of the road. But it made me think, wondering, because of the way we were set up, if we'd interfere with people coming to St. Mary's. My question is, I'm not fully aware, are anyone of the three of you doing, allowing anybody in person, or is it still fully remote for everybody? We haven't really touched on that since we started the show. And believe it or not, I think this is our fifth or sixth show. Kathy, if you want to update kind of on what you guys are doing, and if you know a little bit about what the rabbi and Reverend Eric are doing, that would be great.
Sure. Well, St. John's is fortunate to have a lovely lawn in front of the church. So during the warm months, we were worshiping together outside. I should start by introducing myself. I'm Kathy McAdams. I'm the priest at St. John's Episcopal Church, and happy to be with you. So November 1st, the congregation moved inside for worship. We had all the windows open, even though the heat wasn't working. And we gathered about 20 people. We were able to do that for a few weeks. And as of the 22nd, we have gone back to fully remote. Just to keep everyone safe, because of course all the numbers are rising, and our bishop really encouraged all the congregations in the diocese to go remote. And so we took that guidance and are doing that. That means that we have five or six people in the church putting on the service. Myself, our deacon Maggie Geller, our music director, and another musician, sometimes a soloist, and then the person that's running all the technology. So that's what we've been doing. I wanted to go back to the Thanksgiving service, which was very wonderful. I loved Eric's message. Mary Deal from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints directs our interfaith choir, and she was they were able to put together an audio recording with photos of all of the choir. Really, really beautiful recording. And then there was some live music as well. And all of the clergy were in our respective sanctuaries in our religious garb. So there really was a sense of community there. And one of the best things is that we raised over $1,100 for the Fuel Assistance Fund for Franklin. There's always a collection for the Fuel Assistance Fund at that service, and we were able to do that online as well. So that was quite an accomplishment.
Well, let me just add about the Fuel Assistance Fund. Once upon a time, I served as treasurer, which meant I was the person who was in direct contact with it. I'm not doing that anymore, but I want to let people know. If there's someone in Franklin who is in real need of fuel assistance, in other words, you're in serious risk that your fuel's going to be cut off and you're going to be freezing in your house, contact either your own clergy person if you're part of a house of worship, or if not, our current treasurer is Father Brian Manning of St. Mary's. So contact Father Manning, let him know, or also through St. Mary's is St. Vincent de Paul, which does great work on this and doesn't care what religion you are. If you're in need, contact us and we can get you some fuel assistance. And, I just want to make sure people know about this resource because it's really important.
Can I just add to that? If you go to the parish website under St. Vincent de Paul, there is a phone number. The staff, pretty much the volunteer staff, work out of their homes. So the phone is checked, and then two volunteers will return your call. One will make the call, the other will share in on the call and talk to you and guide you over the phone. So it's a very easy, straightforward process. And the St. Vincent de Paul Society works for the entire town of Franklin, as Rabbi Tom said, not just for the parish. So if you are in need of help, to be able to reach out to them, that's a good thing to know.
Well, go ahead, Reverend Kathy.
I just wanted to add that if anyone still would like to make a donation to that fund, go to the Franklin Interfaith Council website, franklininterfaith.org, and there's a donation button, and that would be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
You know what? I not that this will help, because I don't have many friends on Facebook, let alone in real life, but I'll put it out there after we're done with the show. I think that's a great one of the great things you folks do. And as we've always said, this is your show. Anything we can do, even outside of the show, to enhance what you folks are doing, Pandora and I are all in. So I may email you guys to get a little bit more information, but we'll start really pumping it out there, because it's starting to get cold. Nights are cold. I did want to ask, and we've answered this a lot already, but have you folks, the three of you, changed anything from, say, when you started doing everything remote? I'm sure you've learned, we've all learned, we've gotten a little better at this Zoom thing, hopefully. What have you guys had to do to kind of adapt or change to enhance what you're doing, what you started doing back in the spring? And why don't we go to Rabbi Tom first?
Let's see. Have I learned something? Probably everything is the answer. You know, this was not one of those courses that I studied when I was learning to be a rabbi, how to run a TV show. So, so I mean, we've gotten a bunch of equipment, much of it thanks to a grant from Combined Jewish Philanthropies, which was enormously helpful to us. We have some congregants who are involved in working on this. We've got visual prayer. In Hebrew, we call it visual tefillah, which we have purchased to make to have PowerPoint slides, so that I'm not just skipping through a book online, but people can actually see what's going on. I've learned how to lead a service to a camera with nobody else in the synagogue, which is what typically happens on Friday nights. So, you know, we figured out how to deal with having, typically after our Friday night services, we have something called Oneg Shabbat, which means the joy of the Sabbath, which is essentially a collation, a chance to get together. It's like church is having coffee hour, same kind of thing. So we've learned how to do that online, which is another interesting experience. So, you know, all of that kind of thing.
It has to be, you talked about jokingly your training, and you never took a course, which no one ever took a course to do this. None of the people, and I want to make sure they've taken a little bit of heat this week, teachers get the credit for what they're doing, because my daughter spent 5 years in school training to be a teacher, and not one course did it have to do with remote learning or anything like that. How do you bring you folks work on the energy of a service when you're doing it, but you're talking into a camera? Are you able to see faces? Do you do it so you can see the faces of your parishioners? It amazes me how you folks are able to pull it off with no one there, because I think the energy of people being in the respective locations is huge. So Reverend Eric, how do you deal with that, or how do you cope with it? Or do you guys just not follow the rules and have 150 people in there?
It's a great question, Jay. So on the sort of the restriction side, we are fully remote. We did start broadcasting from our sanctuary in September. Two or three of us are there, but the door is not open for people to come into the meeting house for services, and we can't wait until that's changed. I'm not sure that we actually have figured out how to replicate that experience of being physically together for services. I do get to see the faces of parishioners. We use Zoom, so they are in front of me. That helps. We use the chat box to react during services. That helps. But I don't want to pretend that I've figured out how to replicate that very unique human experience of being in the same room together and feeling this presence of the Spirit. It's just different. And we try. I would say on sort of to the larger question, what we're trying to do is provide experiences for people throughout the week of presence, like in the moment experiences of connection and faith development, and also always having something to look forward to, something that's coming up. So if today is hard, which it often is, and if being present and feeling connected today just isn't working, to have something from a faith perspective that's coming up that might just heal, provide some healing, some connection to look forward to, is sort of the second level of what we're trying to offer.
Keith, I think that's a great answer, and thank you for telling me. I had a great question. I did make a note of that. So when someone comes back and says, "What are you doing?" I can let them know in December I asked a great question. But I think it also leads us into our next subject. We're heading into winter. Things are going to be a little more challenging. Winter's a more challenging time for a lot of people. Pandora, I know you had some questions. Why don't you go ahead?
I think when we look at winter, and there is a lot to celebrate about winter, but there is, because many of us love to be outdoors, the change of season, the colder temperatures, kind of change things up a little bit in the kitchen. If you're a cook, you use different herbs and spices, and you use root vegetables instead of fruits. It's a different season, and we come together differently with family and friends. And during COVID, it's been ways we've tried out to go back to Reverend Jarrett. We try different ways of meeting and gathering and seeing what works and what doesn't work. And we always have a prompt for our discussions. And what I liked about this prompt is that it just wasn't holidays. It was the winter season. So we're looking at 3, 4, 5 months. And we've touched a little bit on how our religious services are going to be different, but how are you and your congregation in conversation coming up saying, "This isolation is challenging," or "This lack of a spontaneous conversation is hard," or "I'm struggling not being with the members of my congregation to celebrate my faith in person?" I'm thinking those conversations might be happening online, socially distanced, but they're happening. And how are you envisioning moving forward through these next 3, 4, 5 months? And I would, I think Kathy, Reverend McAdams, you didn't have an opportunity to chime in on the last one, last conversation, I think, as we're circling around. So I'll begin with you. And if you would start the conversation off looking at the winter months.
Sure. It's just hard. It's just really hard not being able to gather, even though we were able to do that recently. We can see each other on Zoom, occasionally coming in and out of the office, we'll see individuals. And One thing that Maggie, our deacon, and I did this past Sunday is we delivered St. Nicholas cookies to everyone in the congregation, as well as kits to make Advent wreaths for families with young children. And, you know, just showing up at somebody's door and handing them a bag and having a few words of conversation is really special. We're going to try to do that with communion bread for Christmas as well. So those kinds of just brief but in-person interactions. We're also trying to continue some of our work in the community. There's an interfaith food insecurity task force that grew out of the First Universalist Society and is now expanding to the whole Interfaith Council. And so that's, you know, that's good work in conjunction with the Franklin Food Pantry, just to think about folks who don't always have enough food and how we can reach out to them better. Also, St. John's always does a giving tree to benefit the Santa Foundation, and we're doing that online this year. So continuing as many of our traditions as possible and also trying to expand those kinds of things. And then, you know, we're in the Christian tradition, we're in the season of Advent. And that's the time when we're waiting for the birth of our Savior. We're waiting for the second coming of Christ. It's end times. It's also the beginning of the church year. It's the new birth of Jesus. And then, you know, the death that leads to resurrection and new promise. So there's just a lot that's part of that season and that gives us hope.
I like your words. They intertwine some very human, non-religious acts that we do every day with the traditions, the faiths, with the traditions and the beliefs of the faith. And you're intertwining those together as you reach out into the community. And I think that that's a strong pathway to make your way through, is to take the basic teachings and how do we put them into our daily life in 2020, what that looks like. Reverend Eric, can you kind of pick up that thread and take us to what's going on with the Universalist Church?
Well, I really love the way that Reverend Kathy is describing this too. And it reminds me that, you know, the basic religious task hasn't actually changed. It's to live lives of meaning in a faith context. It's just that how we do that now is so much more complicated. We don't know how to do that now, in fact. And resting in tradition is such an excellent way of trying to continue to do that. We're also trying to do that at FUSF, and one of the ways is to lift up various holiday traditions during this time of year. So we'll be celebrating the solstice on the 20th of December, and there's a really nice coincidence this year. The solstice sundown at Stonehenge in England is happening at 11 a.m. this year on December 20th, Sunday, December 20th. Nobody's allowed to go to Stonehenge in person, and they're live streaming the sundown. So we'll be closing our blue solstice service on that Sunday with watching together the sundown over Stonehenge, and hoping that, you know, that'll have a feeling that'll create a feeling of connectedness for folks. We're also going to try something new with one of our Christmas Eve services this year. We have an 8 o'clock Christmas Eve service of carols and lessons. And we're going to do a drive-in option. So, you know, we got an FM transmitter for the parking lot and a 12-foot projection screen, and it'll be exactly the same experience as zooming in from home, but in the parking lot. And we're doing, you know, a lot of restrictions for the sake of safety. But hoping that being able to lift a candle out of your car window as we sing Silent Night is going to, you know, have a little bit of healing power for folks. Somebody in the congregation pointed out that that the holiday break this year is going to be an especially strange, unsettled time for both adults and kids. So we're putting together what we're calling the 12 days of FUSF, our congregation's acronym, and having a morning and an evening activity each of those 12 days of Christmas that is mostly online, but occasionally socially distanced and in person for kids or for intergenerational community or for adults. And hope that'll help folks that are going to be feeling at very loose ends in an unusual way this holiday break as well. And lastly, just want to say that the looking ahead piece of the puzzle, I think, really is important, that the darkest days of the year can start to feel a little bit more survivable, manageable, if you can imagine the sun rising again. And one of the things that we're going to be lifting up and that I'm lifting up is the temple and FUSF will be having a pulpit and a pew exchange over Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday weekend. That is something to await and to really look forward to, even when, you know, when the news and the experience of injustice and the simple darkness of the season can get very heavy, that there is a path forward.
Reverend Eric, I thought that was fantastic, the way you kind of explained that and talked about it. And I wonder, Rabbi Tom, I know all of you do some kind of work, and you probably had people that are members of your parish. One of the big things we keep reading about, and it's going to be tougher going into the winter, is the mental health of people. And it is a real struggle. Even young kids are going through it now that have never gone through it before. And I'm sure there are parents that just have no idea how to handle it, because, again, we never took a course on how to do this kind of show. You didn't watch your parents do the same thing to you growing up. So how are you guys dealing with that part? You know, winter tends to be a little more challenging for a lot of people. Rabbi, what are you guys doing? And do you do anything formally? Is it just an approach to people?
So I'm glad you asked that, because that's actually...
Was that a great question or just a good question?
I thought it was an excellent question.
Thank you very much. I'm going to just sit back and listen now.
Because there is an organization in Boston called the Ruderman Synagogue Inclusion Project, which has been focused on bringing folks with disabilities and other limitations that have gotten in their way of being part of synagogue life into larger synagogue life. And they just awarded our synagogue a grant of money to deal with mental health programming this year, starting now through the end of May. And so we're getting together, and we have several programs we're looking at. And we're planning to have, I think, probably three programs on mental health as a gift for our congregation. And so, you know, for people to have a chance to talk about these things with professionals. That's the major thing we're doing in this time. And I want to give them all, as we say in Hebrew, all the kavod, all the honor for coming up with that and giving us a chance to do it. To move on to the issue of the holiday season and how that connects up. Hanukkah starts Thursday night, which we celebrate for eight nights. And Hanukkah has a lot of meanings. It's all of which I think in some way or the other boil down to resilience. It's a story of the victory of the weak over the strong and the opportunity to for groups that are oppressed to overcome their oppression, particularly relevant, I think, this year. It's about identity and having a sense of pride in who you are that is going to be important going forward. It's about miracle and the opportunity that there are going to be things that we didn't expect. I don't think anybody expected that the success rate on the vaccines was going to be in the 90s. You know, we were thinking 60s maybe. 90s is amazing, and it gives us some hope. And that then gets to perhaps my favorite Hanukkah story, which is there was a debate over how you lit the 8 lights of Hanukkah. Did you start with 8 and go down each night? And there was an argument for that. Or did you start at 1 and add a different candle each night, which is in fact what we do? The explanation that sort of when this argument took place, and it's recorded in the Talmud, the winning argument, the mic drop argument was, in matters of holiness, we always increase. And so it is my hope that this year we're going to increase holiness. Hanukkah is typically a home holiday. We do light a menorah at our synagogue. We have this great big menorah that congregants built, which we light the kerosene lamps. It's very cool. And people come in for that, but of course they won't be, but we'll still light it. But otherwise, it's basically a home holiday. But this year, we have come up with all kinds of programs for people so in their homes, they feel connected to other folks. And we're also doing one in-person event on the Sunday at late afternoon, around 4:30, that you have to sign up through the Temple website to register. But you can drive in your cars, and we'll have an FM station. We'll read a story. Light a menorah for people to see, and then we're going to put people out in small socially distanced groups, a few people each time, who will light a light and send it out on the water so that there will be, it will be bringing, biodegradable. We checked with the town, everything's fine. It's going to be Beaver Pond. But it will be a chance to spread that light, and we're looking forward to that. And the governor has put in some new restrictions, but I'm fairly confident that because of the way we've got this structured, we're going to be within those. Obviously, we will insist on being within them, or we won't do it. But I'm quite confident that it's all going to work out, and that's going to be special for us and for anyone who wants to join. Just plan to stay in your car for the vast majority of the time.
that's awesome. That's awesome. Pandora.
Okay. Am I?
All right. There we go.
Listening to the three of you share the different stories about what it is that you are doing reminded me of a professor that I had who would say, you need to celebrate the small wins. That often in life, we wait for that gigantic big win before we do anything. And as we help people these days through being isolated or through loneliness or through that it's just been such a long time that we've been in this state, we can help them to celebrate the small wins, that what they did, how they came out, how they connected, that they had the courage to log on to a Zoom call when it was frightening for them and they had never done it before and thought that they couldn't, but they did. And coming out to these different ways of using drive-in movie technology from the 50s, but in a 2020 way of doing it and gathering and reaching out across the world that you are all sharing, and you're intertwining those with helping communities in need with food insecurities. It's just amazing all that is happening in Franklin to keep people healthy and alive and aware of what we need to do to help people maintain that.
I think Pandora, you bring up a great point. First of all, you know, we're all kind of in a similar age range, if you will. Kathy, sorry, didn't mean to make you a little bit older, like the rest of us. But to hear that drive, oh, yes, you too, Reverend Eric. I should say it's just me. I'm the only one that's older here. But to hear the drive-ins are being used again for such different purposes, whether it's a concert, whether it's a church service or something, I think is one of the real neat things out there, because people used to go to the drive-in all the time. We went growing up, and then all of a sudden you see them shutting down left and right. And I honestly, I only know of two. I know one in Mendon and one in Wellfleet on the Cape, but they seem to be getting a lot more use. And I think that you're going to see some good come out of everything, because we're going to find different ways of doing it. Kathy, I just wanted to give you a chance to respond, you know, kind of what you folks are doing, how you're handling all that. And I also know you have an awesome focus point for us to kind of bring things home.
Sure. One of the things that I forgot to mention is that a tradition at St. John's every year is to have a Christmas pageant where the children of the parish sing and tell the story of Jesus's birth. And, you know, it's always, we usually have two services on Christmas Eve, so the pageant is the earlier one. And obviously we can't do that this year, but there's a group of people who are taking pieces of the video from last year's pageant and piecing it together with new video of children telling the story in their own words. And so once that video is complete, we're going to have a watch party on Zoom when we can all enjoy that together. So yeah, I second what Tom said about not learning about all this technology in seminary. And oh, that's been a learning curve, but thank God we have it. You know, thank God we have this option, and that we don't have to just all stay in our homes and not connect at all. So whether it's an FM transmitter or a Zoom call or whatever, we are able to do that now. I wanted to share a recording. It's In the Bleak Midwinter, which the poem is by English poet Christina Rossetti, and it was set to music by Gustav Holst. And this particular recording is performed by Choir Cleveland, conducted by Ross Dufin.
Thank you.
is a beautiful reflection. Over the,
isn't it?
I think this is our sixth show, and over the months we've had different reflections and stories and prayers, and to select music as another way of communicating and sharing thoughtfulness of a particular season. It was lovely. Is this a particular piece of music a favorite of yours, Kathy?
Reverend? It is, absolutely. Absolutely. And it, you know, it speaks to the darkness of winter as well as the religious holiday.
I thought it was great. That was really neat, Reverend Kathy. Thank you so much. I hope our listeners are able to appreciate it. You can also watch the video, which is kind of neat to see the singers on YouTube. So thank you so much for that. As we get ready to close here, just wonder if Rabbi Tom or Reverend Eric have anything more to add. Kathy, if you want to follow up that that beautiful song, you're more than welcome to. Anything as we... Go ahead, Rabbi Tom.
I would, actually. I want to say thank you. I thought that was lovely. And one of the things that I enjoy about this program, I started off by talking about the things that we have in common, also the things that make each of us unique. And to hear something from... to hear a beautiful song like that from the Christian tradition, I found to be very moving and made me feel, you know, connected and like I was behind the curtain a little bit at, you know, a tradition different from my own. So I thought that was special and wanted to thank you for that.
Tom, I want to say one of my fondest memories is last Christmas Eve, looking out in my congregation and seeing Rabbi Tom there. It was such a wonderful surprise. And then he invited me to come and share Hanukkah with his congregation, which I did. And that was so beautiful. So what a nice crossover.
Yeah, remember we could all be in person? Oh, well, we move on. Yes, it was lovely.
I want to appreciate, too, and just to share with our listening audience that when you find yourself in the bleak midwinter this season, take a risk. Reach out. Houses of worship throughout our community are here for you, and we hope and trust that that you'll find us in your need.
That's great, Reverend Eric. We do, and if folks that are listening aren't sure how to get in touch with any one of the three that are part of our show, that are our entire show, you can reach out to Pandora and or I or Franklin TV and Radio, and we'll get you in touch right away. The other thing, I just want to bring up, give it a chance again, the fuel assistance program. We're going to promote that. Just a quick... again, if someone could just remind our listeners the best way to reach out for that, Rabbi Tom, that would be great.
By the way, this works for both getting hold of the fuel assistance program and getting hold of any one of us, because our websites are connected through this. If you go to franklininterfaith.org, spelled as it sounds, franklininterfaith.org. If you click on donations, that money will go to the Fuel Assistance Fund. If you click on the websites of the particular houses of worship, that'll connect you there with them as well. So please connect up with us and connect up with the Fuel Assistance Fund. We both need you.
And one more time on that website.
franklininterfaith.org.
I'm just a very slow typer, so...
Never hurts to repeat, franklininterfaith.org.
I want to, you know, as we head towards the holidays, Christmas and everything, Hanukkah, I have to say that just doing this show, I'm really thankful for. It's a change of pace that I think is just excellent. If you'd asked me a year ago if I'd be involved with a show like this, I have to say I'd probably say no, but I am so lucky that Pandora and you folks came up with the idea, and just to allow me to drag it down a little bit, I'm very much appreciative of. So I thank all of you there, and I'm going to let Pandora finish things off here.
I echo Jay's thanks. I thank you, Reverend Kathy McAdams. I thank you, Reverend Eric Cherry. And I thank you, Rabbi Tom. Each week I learn, I process, I reflect on the conversation and what is shared. And I'm thinking that people listening to this show do the same thing. It's really a nice resource for us to have. And the fact that we have an interfaith council in our town is such a blessing, such a kindness, and it speaks to the town of Franklin. And if you're just looking for something a little to do that's safe and in the evening, you might drive down East Central Street, Main Street, around the town common. It's well lit up. It's absolutely beautiful. The trees, the town common, it's bright. We have a wonderful DPW in Franklin that helped to do this, along with a lot of community volunteers who did a lot of decorating. But it's something that you can do safely.
And I know the high school hockey team, boys hockey team, was very involved with the decorating. So just a shout out to them as well.
I'm going to have to give a shout out to the girls hockey team because they were there for the decorating of the bridge, the bridge and all the pots of plants that you see around the downtown. So our both hockey
awesome.
Team and our high school. I mean, again, it speaks to our community. It was really nice.
Yeah. Well, thank you folks again for your time. Everybody listening. We are going to wrap it up here. We will see you next time on A Priest, a Minister, and a Rabbi Walked Into a TV Station. I'm Jay Horrigan for Pandora Carlucci and our Rabbi Tom, Reverend Kathy, and Reverend Eric. Want to wish everybody a safe and happy holiday season.